From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, his name is Jonathan Zapp. He's a paranormal investigator. How parasites can be controlling the world, and I don't mean the bugs, not those kind of parasites. He calls them energy sappers. Yes, I'm in St. Louis for just a week, needed to check in on some things, also wanted to take a plane flight just to see how things went, and I've got to quickly tell you, I flew on Southwest, and they did a great job getting everybody there on time. They really did, considering what we have been going through over the last couple days. But I've got to tell you, you know, I'm fortunate enough because a lot of the things I have duplicate things in Los Angeles and St. Louis, so I don't have to bring a lot of things when I travel. But I went lightly, got through the line okay, and then when we were ready to board the plane in Los Angeles, ready to get on the plane, they decided they wanted a spot check the plane, but everybody had to go through a check. So before we gave them our boarding pass and went onto the plane, we had to open up our bags and they had to check everything you carried on. And to me, that was a little over, I think. But it is a hassle right now to fly. There's no doubt about that. I'll talk to you more about that during the week. In Lebanon, rocket launches, airstrikes, artillery barrages fell silent Monday. And then they started picking up again. Hezbollah rockets went into Lebanon. But they have been replaced with a new war of words between Hezbollah's fiery and defiant sheikh and Israel's prime minister, each declaring victory in the 30-day conflict. Israeli Prime Minister Olmert, facing challenges from rivals at home, told Parliament that the offensive had changed the strategic balance in the region, ending the state within a state run by Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. He said most of the guerrilla group's arsenal of weapons was destroyed. Meanwhile, Hezbollah's fiery leader, Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, meanwhile, went on Hezbollah's television to declare a strategic and historic victory against Israel, a declaration that prompted gunfire across the Lebanese capital. The counterclaims of victory came as Lebanon announced it would begin preparations to send 15,000 troops into southern Lebanon under the terms of the United Nations brokered ceasefire agreement. Also, that there will be some troops, some international troops there to beef things up. Let's hope that this stays. In Iraq, though, the problems continue. The U.S. military says that a natural gas explosion was to blame for a series of blasts that killed 47 people in a predominantly Shiite neighborhood the night before. Some residents say, no, they were car bombs. It was a rocket barrage. But the U.S. military says it was a natural gas explosion. The condition of the former Israeli Prime Minister, 78-year-old Ariel Sharon, has deteriorated further. Sharon has been in a coma since suffering a stroke in early January. A new brain scan shows that the deterioration in his brain function. He's also developing pneumonia now in both lungs. And a scan also says that he has developed a new infection. Time is near for him. The last two of the 11 Egyptian exchange students who failed to show up at their college program here in the United States have been apprehended. They were in Richmond, Virginia. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents arrested them at an apartment building in Richmond. The students were to attend a month-long program at Montana State University, and they decided they didn't want to show up. So the university reported them to Homeland Security, and it was a good thing that they did. Homeland Security, by the way, is saying that these students are not considered a terrorist risk. In New York, a sad story. Five kittens thrown into a frying pan with pork chops and hot oil were recovered at an animal shelter. They're there now getting better. That's the good part of the story. The man accused of scalding them was awaiting a court appearance. He went to a friend's house. The friend had left the kitchen. And this guy decided to toss these 6 or 7 week old kittens into the cooking pan. The kittens suffered slightly burned skin. They are recovering. Maybe they should do the same thing with that individual, huh? Not to worry with this story. Scientists have discovered the possible presence of bird flu in the United States in swans near the banks of Lake Erie, but does not appear to be the worrisome strain that the government has long feared. All this hoopla about the pandemic, about the bird flu, 138 people have died worldwide since this all started a few years ago. In Florida, a pregnant woman in labor driving herself to the hospital crashed her car and gave birth while trapped in the mangled, partially submerged vehicle. Her name is Kenyetta Biggs. Spent more than an hour in the car, and it was just an incredible story before she and her newborn daughter were rescued and taken to a hospital. She suffered a broken leg. She and the baby are doing well. The baby, by the way, has been named Miracle, M-Y-R-A-C-L-E. A search has begun to locate the original film footage of man's first steps on the moon. The footage of the Apollo 11 crew's landing on the moon is one of the 20th century's most important artifacts. Some believe the tapes are stored somewhere in the archive at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland, but who knows? Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor, head of the EnterpriseMission.com, has been following this story. Richard, ever since you started talking about it, it looks at least that somebody's beginning to look for these films, huh?
Again, it looks like Coast to Coast has done it again.
I love this story.
Well,
it's
really kind of peculiar because now we have John Sarkissian, who was the operations scientist at the Australian Radio Telescope Facility at the Parkes Observatory, who kind of put this out in a PDF that he and a team of ex-NASA people were looking for these tapes.
Right.
And he told Space.com today something really bizarre. He says, I'd like to simply clarify that the tapes are not lost as such, which implies they were badly handled, misplaced, and are gone forever. This is not the case.
Where are they?
Well, this is kind of like one inside crowd protecting the other inside crowd. They didn't want to embarrass NASA. Apparently, they've been looking for these things for at least a year, and some people claim they've been looking for them for 2 or 3 years, and they never noticed, like, in 1971 or 72 is when they last went missing.
Unbelievable story. Well, let's hope that they get to this, because these are priceless tapes and films.
Well, the story gets even weirder. It turns out that there are other scientists, people who are looking at lunar data and are coming up empty. There's a Philip Stuckey, who's an associate professor in London, Ontario, who's looking for lunar data to complete an atlas of lunar exploration. And he told Space.com today that he was looking for images from an unmanned spacecraft called Explorer 49. It was a NASA radio astronomy mission that went into orbit around the moon. And they had a really cool panoramic camera to monitor the deployment of the booms, which took pictures of the moon kind of incidentally. And he says it seems like the science data from the mission were preserved, but not the images.
That's weird.
And then the Soviet Union is responding that they have people looking for old lunar data there that somehow now they can't find. Do you see a pattern, George?
Well, as you know, there are no coincidences. There's something strange here, I'll tell you, Richard. Well, should we still keep up the heat, or do we let it go now?
No. We obviously
happens.
Have to keep up the heat. I have a newfound friend, a pen pal, who is the station manager for TV 49. Remember the D.C. television station that tried to simulcast our program the other week? He has been heavily involved. He's actually been contacted by some of the NASA in-crowd. Get this. They told him, the NASA guys are looking for these tapes, that the C2C crowd, as they call them, and me, RCH, are nuts and should not be trusted on this story. Now, they called him immediately after we did the show. We then found out, remember how I directed this audience to send emails to the NASA administrator? That there was some kind of operation in the administrator's office called, get this, Operation Barracuda Block, designed to keep any emails sent to the administrator containing the words Apollo or Apollo 11 from reaching him.
That's why you didn't want that put in any of the emails in terms of the heading.
That's right. I wanted people who are obviously upset about this to put things like freedom and rights and the Constitution in those headers so that if they delete those, you know, they're actually have to be doing, you know, what they really are doing behind the scenes, which is deleting freedom and rights and the Constitution.
Well, we'll keep up the heat, Richard. Those tapes and the films belong to us, the American people, and we'll just keep pushing, okay?
Well, we think we've got some really extraordinary new data to present at the Joshua Tree Conference, and I think when people see that, they're going to realize why these tapes have gone missing.
Richard C. Hoagland heads up the enterprisemission.com. Richard, thank you. Hey, by the way, for decades, our solar system has consisted of 9 planets, even as scientists debated whether Pluto really belonged. Then the recent discovery of an object larger and farther away from Pluto threatened to throw this slice of the cosmos into chaos. So should this newly found icy rock known as 2003 UB313 become the 10th planet, or should Pluto be demoted? Well, in a moment, we're going to check in with astronomer Philip Plait, because at a 12-day conference, scientists are talking about this right now in the Czech Republic capital of Prague, trying to decide whether to subtract Pluto or christen a new one. We'll be back with Philip Plait in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Philip Plait is an astronomer and a good one, author, webmaster of the Bad Astronomy website, the blog, and the Bad Astronomy / Universe Today bulletin board. He received his PhD in astronomy from the University of Virginia. Philip Plait on Coast to Coast. Hello, Philip. How are you?
Hi, George. Doing great. Thanks for having me on again.
Good to talk with you. Hey, tell me about this conference that's going on now in the Czech Republic capital of Prague. I mean, are they really considering dumping Pluto as a planet?
I wish I knew. It's the conference is the International Astronomical Union, or the IAU, and it's the largest professional society of astronomers in the world. They're meeting in Prague, and boy, oh boy, do I wish I were there. Prague is a beautiful city. And they meet every couple of years, and there are all sorts of things that go on. News releases are sent out, and there have already been pictures and discoveries coming out. But the IAU is in charge of a lot of things, and they have different committees, and one of them is the nomenclature committee, the people who decide the naming of names. So if you find an asteroid, or if you discover a new crater on some moon around another planet, you want to get it named, you have to go through them. So the question becomes, is Pluto a planet? When we discover an object, do we call it a planet? Do we call it an asteroid? What do we call it? And the thing is, you know, Pluto has been called a planet since its discovery in 1930. But a few years ago, astronomers have been discovering these objects, which are close to Pluto's size out there, even farther from the sun. And then one, as you mentioned before the break, at UB313, which is a little bit bigger than Pluto, and it's way far out. And the question becomes, you know, if we call Pluto a planet, do we call this thing a planet? And if there's this thing out there, how many more are there? There could be thousands, millions of these things. And, you know, oh gosh, I'll tell you, I talk to my friends about this, and I get email about this, and everybody says, you know, is Pluto a planet? What do we do? And I tell them, you know, look, Pluto's a planet because the IAU says it's a planet. The question is not whether Pluto is a planet. The question is, what is a planet? You know, we kind of have an idea of this. The Earth is a planet. Jupiter's a planet.
Right.
But, you know, whenever you try to define them, you find yourself getting into trouble. You say, well, it's an object that's round, and maybe it orbits the sun. And you think, well, we discovered planets around other stars. Okay, a planet's something that's round that orbits a star. Well, what if a planet gets ejected from its solar system? That can happen. Okay, you know, and you can keep playing this game. And I found that anytime anybody comes up with a definition of a planet, even a scientific one, I can come up with an object that they would call a planet, that you would just go, that's not a planet. And I would find objects where you would say, that's not a planet, when by definition it is.
Well, so Philip, what would you call Pluto if it wasn't a planet? I mean, would it be an asteroid? Would it be just a big old space rock, a burned out comet? I mean, what would it be?
Well, what happened is that out beyond Pluto were these giant balls of ice. And they're part of what's called the Kuiper Belt, or the Edgeworth Kuiper Belt, depending on who you're talking to. And they're basically giant balls of ice, giant comets out there. And Pluto may just be the biggest example of one of these. It may not really be a planet like the Earth or Mercury or Jupiter or Saturn. It may just be one of these giant ice balls. And the thing is, these things really are different than the Earth. They form differently. They formed in a different part of the solar system. They were probably ejected out to that area. You know, passes of Neptune, its gravity will slingshot them out into the outer solar system. And so these objects really are different than what we think of as planets. In my opinion, if I had to define a planet, and I can't, I'll make that clear now, I don't think I would call Pluto a planet. I'd say we have eight major planets and then zillions of these little things which are difficult to describe.
Because actually they're talking about the possibility that they could expand the solar system to 23, 39, they see even 53 planets. I mean, that sounds huge on the scope of it, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, that's just because we're used to nine. Back when Ceres, the largest asteroid, was discovered, that was in the year 1800. Actually, it was January 1st, 1800, the first day there. And everybody hailed it as being a new planet. Well, they started finding more of these things, and they realized they weren't very big, and they were in between Mars and Jupiter. And it became quickly clear that this was a different class of object. But for a while, people were calling them planets, not for very long. Now, we have sort of the same situation here. Pluto was the first one discovered. There are zillions of more of these. But now we have sort of this grandfather clause. Pluto's been a planet for 76 years. It's going to be tough, especially in the public's mind, to change that now. And a lot of astronomers aren't happy about it either.
Okay, so what happens to our daily life, Philip, if they decide not to continue to call Pluto a planet? I mean, is it over the way we know it?
Oh, chaos, panic, dogs living with cats. No, in fact, I think the people who are going to be scrambling to catch up with this are going to be the astrologers, and I'm going to sit back and really love watching these guys trying to explain away why we knew these were planets all along, or we knew Pluto wasn't a planet all along, and I'm just going to sit back and cackle at this.
I love it. What's new on your plate, Philip?
Oh, my gosh, all sorts of things. I've got the blog going, and that's doing pretty well. And as a matter of fact, this IAU meeting really is starting to put out a lot of data. They just released a picture today from Hubble that is gorgeous of a star-forming region. They just released a new picture in the infrared of the Orion Nebula, probably one of the most famous objects in the sky. And it's a cool picture. And so keep your eyes open. Check, you know, the online websites for astronomy, including mine, and you'll find all sorts of really cool pictures and interesting news coming out over the next 2 weeks.
You know, Philip, I think history will say that the Hubble telescope may be one of the greatest tools, greatest instruments that astronomers have ever had.
That's true. It's funny because it's not a very big telescope, but its advantage is that it's out into space. And so once it's out there, it doesn't have to worry about the atmosphere and all the problems with that. And so it's really changed the way astronomers have done astronomy. But I think its real role in history is how it's changed people's attitude about astronomy, because the pictures are so gorgeous and so almost mind-numbing that it's changed the way the public has viewed astronomy. And it's just made it wonderful for people like me, because those of us who evangelize this sort of thing, it really helps us a lot.
Did you see where they think now that the universe may be even older than they had anticipated?
Oh, yeah, I heard about this. And basically, these guys were looking at a nearby galaxy, and they determined its distance using an independent method, a way that had not really ever been done before to another galaxy. And they got a number that was not what matched the numbers that had already been determined for the distance of this galaxy. And it got reported that this means the universe is bigger and younger or older or something, I can't even remember. And really, that's not what's going on. What's going on is they're saying that somewhere down the line, one of our distance methods to this galaxy has failed us. And nobody knows which one it is. But the thing is, you know, we have like 10 or 15 ways of finding the distance to this galaxy, and they all agree except this one. So it sounds to me like these guys may have something in their data that fooled them into thinking that this galaxy is farther away than it really is. But we won't know until we get more data.
All right. Well, great. Philip, by the way, the website, badastronomy.com, very easy to get to, very easy to kind of roll through it. The blog is always updated. You've got some great information there. Thank you for your service, by the way, Philip. It's great to have astronomers and people like you as part of Coast to Coast as well.
Well, thank you very much, George.
All right. You take care of yourself. It's Philip Plate. He calls himself the bad astronomer, but he's a darn good one. We're going to have open lines for you now for the rest of the half hour. So let me give you those numbers. Get ready. Write them down. Or if you have a great memory, here you go. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line ready to roll for you at 818-5255. 501-401-4721. And the wild card line is 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie. Get ready for open lines now on Coast to Coast AM. Well, a man from Austria is planning to run around the world. That's right, run around the world in 365 days, all for charity. He said he'll start his marathon, 25,000-kilometer run on January 1st of next year, completing about 70 kilometers a day. The 38-year-old, who hopes to raise money for Austrian children's charities, great effort, by the way, plans to run diagonally across continents, beginning in Asia, finishing in Austria on December 31st. First 2007, he will be accompanied by medics to ensure that he remains in good health. Speaking of good health, pick up the After Dark newsletter, the next issue that's coming. You get 14 for the price of 12. Read all about the day I almost died. Yes, that's true. Call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505, or go online at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast. I'm here in the cave. Checked things out. You know, we had one heck of a storm in St. Louis several weeks ago where 600,000 homes and people and businesses were without power. 600,000 clients of Ameren UE, and it took them about a week to get everybody's power restored again. The cave was pretty well intact. We were pretty lucky. Let's go to the phones. First-time caller line, you're on the air with us. Where are you calling from?
This is Joe from Bossier City, Louisiana.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Definitely a pleasure. Something came to mind as I was listening to you, something that I experienced several years ago, and that is missing time. And I hear you mention that particular phrase along with several other guests of yours, and I was going to see if perhaps it was sort of the same thing that I experienced. It sort of goes as follows. I was out camping following a trail. And as I was walking the trail, I noticed, because there was a couple forks in the trail, that I had come back to a place that was the same place I'd just been to. I don't know. So I figured, maybe I got turned around. Well, something just wasn't right. So I looked at my watch, and sure enough, it was like 2 hours ahead of what I thought I was, or the time that I thought it was. And I just stood there puzzled. And for the rest of the day, I was just dumbfounded, just wondering what happened. And it was just so bizarre.
You know, we really don't know what has happened, aside from just something happening to your memory or fast-forwarding your memory. You know, there are a lot of possibilities. I mean, what about the possibility that you walked through another dimension, for example, in what could very well be called a parallel universe? And, you know, where there's another you and everything's almost the same, maybe it's out of kilter for a little bit. Maybe it's 2 hours out of kilter and somehow you cross over and then cross back. It is weird. And you know you feel fine. There's nothing medically wrong with you.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I totally understand that. And I'm definitely a believer in the parallel universe and different things. That's a possibility I'd never thought about. But, you know, who knows? I may have just taken a trip.
And I got to tell you, people who drive their cars, it's happened to a lot of people all the time as well. So thanks for your call. Appreciate you being on Coast to Coast. Let's go east of the Rockies. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Calvin. I'm calling from Georgia.
Hi, Calvin.
Okay. I have a friend that's a shop steward on my job, and he has a patent from a German scientist. He bought him out, and he's partners with him, and he brought it to the United States and put it and patented it. It is a generating system, like, you know, those portable units that are gas-powered.
Yeah.
It's about that size. It's made out of plastic. It's self-contained, and it runs on just water. It makes no noise and no pollution, and it generates, if not more, generation than a gas-powered one.
Calvin, how does this thing work?
It creates static electricity. It's self-contained. And somehow it's vented, too, so the water constantly gets oxygenated. They've actually put this portable unit in an electric car and taken the electric batteries out and put this unit in there, and it's still in their testing, and the scientists are still scratching their head. It's used about a quart of water a month, and it drove about, I don't know how many miles, maybe 900, 1,900 miles.
My God, what a great novel invention this could be. Now, let me ask you a little bit. In terms of the generator, how much power does it throw? What can it power up?
The application is unlimited. You can make it a power plant size, like size of a power plant, and it would generate as much energy to run the whole United States.
Oh, my God. If you needed to, let's say you wanted to run just your house on a regular basis, just your house, how big would it have to be?
He has a unit that's about half the size of a refrigerator, and it's going to run off tap water, and it'll probably use about a gallon of water a month, and it makes no noise, no noise at all, and it just makes constantly energy, and you run your whole house off it. It's innovation generation. Home Depot has 1 million units on order through him, and it's already being manufactured in Illinois.
I got to tell you, if Home Depot is buying this and it starts getting out into the public's hand, this guy could win a Nobel Prize for science.
Be big. He's going to be big as
huge.
Bill Gates.
Can you get him on the show?
He don't want to go public, but it's been dying. I've been dying to just let the public know about
it. Well, I mean, if Home Depot is going to be buying these units, it's public, right?
Yeah. I think they sworn to secrecy until the day they're on the market.
When do you think this is going to happen?
In 3 months. In
three months,
you'll see advertisement in the media and TV commercials and stuff.
What do you think it's going to be called? Do they have a brand name for it?
I believe he said it's the new innovation generation or something like that. It's phenomenal. He has the one that's a refrigerator size. You'll be able to run everything, air conditioning, heating, lighting, everything off of it.
Okay, and how much do you think that'll cost, Calvin? What will it cost us?
He's saying about $4,000 to $5,000 the unit for the house. And the portable one is about $1,000 through me, through him, and he's saying Home Depot's going to turn around and sell them for $19.99, and he's got a lot of orders overseas, Lebanon, Egypt, everywhere, like the third world. I mean, he's going to be like Edison, putting the lights on in America.
This is absolutely incredible. This is one of the greatest things I've heard.
And I was listening to Art Bell last night about his discharge bills that he has to pay, and
yes.
I'm like, this would be the ideal thing for him. He'd be out in the middle of wherever he is, and he'll have his own power plant.
I love it. Now, and you say this is a silent unit. It doesn't make a lot of noise.
Right. It's a silent unit. It's self-contained. And I asked him, how are you going to be worried about the Chinese or somebody copying it? He says they have that new patent thing they have to obey by.
Right.
Plus, he has a backup. If any seal on the unit is broken, it will disintegrate. And I said, well, what if they x-ray it? I says, well, he says it's all protected by lead and stuff, and the whole thing is made out of plastic. He says it's uncopyable.
All right, would you stay in touch with us? Would you send me an email? I just want to stay very close to you as we get to the date that you think this thing is going to hit the market, okay?
This
is incredible. And just send me an email. It's george@coasttocoastam.com. That's one of the most startling things I've heard. Can you, a plastic generator, it uses just a little bit of water a month, it's silent, and can power up everything? It's too good to be true. Well, remember what they say about that, if it's too good to be true. Wildcard Line, welcome to the program. You're on the air. Hi there.
George?
Hi.
Hi, this is Veronica. I'm calling from Chicago. I'm also a first-time caller. How are you?
Well, fine, Veronica. Thanks. I'm glad you made it in.
Thank you. George, you know what? I'm currently taking some biology classes. I'm going to go into radiological technology.
Okay.
And there's just some things that aren't adding up for me in terms of medicine.
How so?
We've been doing cell structures and things of that nature, and it just appears to me that things like cancer or AIDS are not as elusive in terms of finding a cure as I think that the medical industry would have us to believe. Outside of the body, these things are kind of really fragile. And if you can, break down, the nuclear envelope of these cells, you know, you can therefore stop it from replicating.
Okay, but are you saying, Veronica, though, that science should be able to cure these horrible diseases and they're not?
Yes, you know what? I live in Chicago, and I'm in a pretty metropolitan area.
Sure.
And you know, in my circle of friends, I have some gentlemen that are gay and that are HIV positive. And
well, let me tell you, it crosses all kinds of sexual preferences.
I'm simply saying, I do understand that. And I'm simply saying that this is my exposure to it. And it just appears to me that 25 years into this disease, I just cannot believe that we're nowhere closer to finding a cure for these.
Well, yeah, but aren't these medical cocktails that they've put together, aren't they working? Aren't they slowing down the virus a little bit?
You know what, George? Slowing down is not the same as a cure.
Well, that's true.
It's not the same as a cure. And also in terms of cancer. Now, recently, Claretta Scott King, she passed away from cancer.
Yeah.
But as I understand it, prior to her leaving this world, she went to Mexico for an alternative therapy that's not offered here in the United States.
Well, we had a doctor on, I think it was last week when I was back in Los Angeles, who said something which was kind of peculiar because I don't agree with it. And he said that if mainstream medicine found cures for specific ailments and diseases like cancer, like AIDS, that they would rush to the market with it. And I don't necessarily believe that. I think they make more money in funding and grants, don't they, than they would with the cure?
To me, it's like this. If you keep a person on maintenance, you're making more money than if you cure them. And I feel that this, and see, I'm going into a medical field. So, you know, a lot of things are not swaying.
Okay, so you don't trust mainstream medicine, do you?
You know what? Listen, I believe there has to be a blend. You know what? I recently, here in Chicago, a movie came out called America, Freedom to Fascism.
Yeah.
And the director and producer...
That's our buddy Aaron Russo.
Aaron Russo was there, and he did a Q&A across the street at the Borders. And, you know, before he did anything, he said, you know, please excuse him because he was undergoing cancer treatment.
That's right.
In Germany.
Yep.
In
That's
Germany.
True.
And he himself said, George, he himself said that when he was diagnosed here in America, that the doctor said that you're a very sick man and that you need to get your affairs in order because you are not going to make it.
Well, you know, Veronica, I agree with you. Now, that doesn't take away from some dedicated medical practitioners here in the United States. I mean, men and women who have devoted their lives and careers and futures to developing cures and finding things to help people. I mean, there are a lot of people trying to do that. But at the same time, there's huge industries that I think want to continue playing the game as they make more and more money in research than they do with the actual cures. So I'm not going to deny what you're saying may not be true. I mean, there are a lot of things you've just said that may be right on the button, as a matter of fact. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi. How are you doing, George?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
I just have two questions. But first of all, I'd like to say that conversation you had with that man about the generators? Plant,
yeah.
Man, talk about it. Interesting. That's astounding if it's true.
Hope it is. It's one of those things where it sounds, again, too good to be true, but I'm telling you, if it hits the market, I'm buying one just to have one.
Hey, you're not the only one.
Yeah.
Okay, the first question I have for you is that it was stimulated by the, I don't know if it was a previous show that was recorded or if it was a current interview.
Okay,
and
what
it
was
it? Pardon me?
What was it? Try to
test
my memory.
It has to do with the guy about the Apollo films.
That's my buddy Richard Hoagland. He was live.
Exactly. Okay.
All right.
In regards to that, I was reading in the library a couple magazines, and one of them I came across an item that said that the Russians were going to send up some probes that were going to land in the area where supposedly on the Sea of Tranquility
mm-hmm.
where we landed
right.
and check out the equipment there. And the question I have is, if someone wanted to make sure that there was really something landed there, that we were there? Has anybody just used a telescope to look?
And well, you can't use the Hubble because it's too powerful and the moon's too close. But we have tested the fact that we were there. I mean, the astronauts, when they were on the moon, had left some experiments. And one was a reflective experiment with light and laser. We were on the moon, believe me. I mean, if I'll tell you anything about life, take that one to the bank. We were on the moon, and our dedicated astronauts who risked their lives, they went. Did some photographic pictures that might have been done in a studio, get mixed in with some original pictures, entirely possible. And did that help create this controversy? Maybe. But believe me, we went to the moon. First time caller line, you're up. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I've been listening to your show for a long time. I just love it. But I got a very bizarre story to tell you because I'm your age. I'm 56 years old.
Yeah.
And I've heard your EVPs on the radio. And you know how you just have that doubt, you know, like I've never, you know, unless you experience something like this yourself, it's the most bizarre story. This story I'm going to tell you, I felt like I was in a horror movie myself. I mean, I'm serious. This, not just EVPs that happen here. But let me go on with the story because I know your time is short.
Yeah, I've got 2 minutes for you. Go ahead.
Right. My brother-in-law works at did work there at a car dealership in Pomona, California. And he came in. We play cards every Friday. He came in and says, you know, the light went upstairs at this car dealership. There's no offices. I could see why. Nobody works up there. It's all downstairs. It's a 100-year-old building. He's there with the secretary at night doing the books. And the light goes on. So he goes up, turns it off, comes back downstairs. Next thing, light goes on again. He goes back upstairs, turns it off, and all of a sudden, these unseen hands, this is the story he told me, I pushed him down the stairs.
Pushed him down the stairs? Like he tried to kill him?
They tried to kill him. So he comes in playing cards. He says, my energy is drained. Zapped. I said, you know what? I said, I've never tried this, but I got one of these CC Crane recorders, you know, that I got the radio too. I said, I'm going to take this recorder with me and I'm going to put an external mic on it.
All right.
And then my friend had a video camera, low light video camera. So myself and I went, my daughter that's in college, she went, and my brother-in-law went, and then the guy with the video camera, a good friend of mine. And this is my first experience. Now, I've never tried this, but we're going to find out what this is all about. So we go there, right? And the place is dark. I says, let's leave it that way. He's filming, and Heno, that's short for Eugene, my brother-in-law, he goes upstairs. And as we're walking through the hall, he's going upstairs, and he's explaining, okay, now when I was here, and as I did this, blah, 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 right? And just at that moment, there's a flash of light. I've got this on video, George, a flash of light that completely illuminated.
Can you get us some of this so we can get a look Absolutely. At it and put it up
yes,
on the website?
Can. Absolutely. You can have it looked at. You can have it engineered. You can see that there's not, that we have not tampered with this tape.
I believe you. Are you a believer now?
I'm 100% believer. 130% believer, but this is not all, George.
Okay, I got to run though. I'm at the top. I'll give you 10 seconds. Go for it, real fast.
Okay, we asked what the name was, and it said Luella. I mean, it's clear on the tape. I mean, this we actually were communicating with this thing, and it was answering back on the tape. We didn't hear the tape until I got back home. We played it back. You know what I'm saying?
All right, you promise you'll get it to me?
I promise I'll get it to you.
You got it. We'll take a look at it, Lex. Get ready for this one, and if you like it, if it looks good. You get it up on the coasttocoastam.com website. In a moment, we'll be joined by Jonathan Zapp on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about parasites. No, not diseases. These are people. I'll be back.